Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Here we are. It's Thursday evening, so it must be time to talk about 13 Reasons Why.
13 Reasons Why, once again.
All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, today we're going to be talking about episodes 5 and 6. So we're really excited about these episodes because we're really, as I rewatched them in preparation for tonight, it was, I can feel the momentum building as far as the emotional momentum building.
You really can with these this episode, you can start to feel more important things going on. The tension is rising.
Yes.
We discussed this earlier that this may not be something you want to binge watch because you do feel it really rising. The fight scene in one of these episodes,
and
you feel the animosity that's developing. And the real threats that they're making to each other,
right?
During these episodes, and you can really feel the tension mounting.
Yeah, the emotional deterioration of some of these characters,
and the characters are really coming up, but they're starting to unravel.
It's getting rough.
Yeah, the emotional content goes way up.
Yeah.
In these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You can tell something bad is going to be happening.
It's coming. It's coming. And so so we're going to talk about those two episodes tonight because there's some really good things in here. I think that there's really good information for parents, really good information for school professionals.
Right.
I think that these two episodes really kind of start to highlight a few things that, again, we kind of knew were building, but were really made very apparent.
Right. There are good things for parents in these episodes, and we do want to talk about some of those things.
So yeah.
I'm glad we're going to broach those.
Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and get started? We'll get over to our slide here. And so here we are. So the first...
this is tape three.
Tape three, side A. And here we're talking about Courtney.
Right. And Courtney is that diminutive little girl.
She's very interesting because Courtney is a fascinating actually
she's
character.
She is.
Because she has two dads.
She's being raised by two gay men.
Right.
Neither apparently are married.
Neither of which appear to be to my eye of Asian descent. So it makes me wonder if she's adopted.
That's what it sounds like.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But she's very highly motivated. Mm-hmm. She's very social.
Right.
But she's also very, very concerned about how she appears, how she presents to others.
And she explains why.
Right.
As we get through this episode.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so of course this episode begins where the last one ended, of course. And what happened in the last one is we know that Hannah and Courtney had a picture taken of them by Tyler, of them kissing one night in Hannah's room. Mm-hmm. And that picture was spread around.
Of course.
And what we have is the deterioration now of that friendship that was developing between Hannah and Courtney. And I think that one of the big things that came out initially was when Hannah said, you know, I needed a friend.
Right.
You know, she was talking to Courtney and said, was talking to her about...
In this tape,
right. Mm-hmm. When she was talking to Courtney about, you know, why Courtney made some of the decisions that she made, why Courtney kind of turned on her and everything, Hannah said, you know, all I needed was a friend.
Right.
And you know, you couldn't be that friend for me. So that's huge because the idea here is that many times, and what we're going to, again, kind of see this throughout the tapes, throughout the remainder of the tapes, is Hannah's looking for that one person.
She's looking for somebody.
That's what all this is about. She keeps going through this the series of people, and each one is a disappointment.
Right. It was each Kat one. Before the first school year. Then it was Jessica, or then it was Justin.
Justin.
And then it was Jessica, and then it was Jessica and Alex, mm-hmm. and then each of these people are people that seem to connect to her initially.
Right.
And then there's something that happens.
Harm her in some way.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very good example, I think, of what happens to a lot of teenagers in schools is that they try to make some of these relationships, especially when they're coming to new schools and when there's kinds of changes, they're trying to make some of these connections and they think that they found somebody.
Right.
Only to be disappointed.
Right. And it shows you how tenuous these relationships are, you know, that you think you're entering either an intimate relationship or a deeper relationship or a safe relationship.
Right.
And that's the whole thing with Courtney,
right,
is that she thought she was entering a safe relationship. Turns out it didn't turn out that way for her. And it's relationship after relationship after relationship that turns out not to be safe.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's devastating for her.
And it's damaging.
Because she really needed that connection.
Right.
Because, of course, this comes after all of the things fell apart with Jessica and Alex and everyone else.
That's right.
And so she really needed someone to be that, mm-hmm. that safety, right, that support. And who better than the person who, you know, is at least appears to have the goal of becoming the most popular person in the school. Mm-hmm. That seems to be sort of Jessica.
Well, she's one of those.
Courtney's
Courtney takes, you know, she has all these projects and she sets up the Halloween or the Valentine thing. And she's sort of that kid who organizes stuff, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. keeps school spirit,
right,
and keeps
right.
things running in the school, you know, like the cruise director.
Yeah. Know?
And so, yeah, that should have been a safe place for her.
Right. Mm-hmm. But as soon as something negative happens, they turn
on each other.
And my goodness, I kept feeling so bad for Hannah because it just seemed like, and you know, certainly we learn some more as the tapes go by. Courtney just comes across as so mean.
Right.
I mean, it's just like.
But she's just protecting herself.
She is.
I mean, she's trying to navigate these rapids of high school, if we can use that analogy. She's trying to survive,
right,
and not be damaged.
Right.
So she sacrifices Hannah, mm-hmm. So to save herself, you know, and that's what everybody's sort of doing.
Yeah.
Is they're navigating as well as they can. Now
you
have a few predators,
right,
but by and large, the others are simply trying to survive this.
Right.
The rapids.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's again, despite the dramatization of it. Mm-hmm. This is something that happens every day.
Well, that's right. And there are people who made the comment that, well, you know, Hannah's beautiful and she's popular and people want to be close to her. And so it's hard to feel sorry for her. Right. She's an actress and this is a movie, but these things do happen to real people.
Absolutely.
And I think that's how we have to view this. This isn't really real life. It is real life because students do sacrifice each other to save themselves.
Okay? Right.
And so that's what we ought to be talking about here is that this is the problem, is that everybody's struggling in one way or another.
Right.
And they do sacrifice to save themselves.
Right.
Because everybody's got a and what you see in this is that everybody has a problem.
Right.
Every one of these kids has a problem.
Yeah.
And we do in real life too. Everybody's doing so. Everybody's carrying something.
Right. Now, as this episode progresses, and this I think is another terrific example of what we're talking about, the fact that, you know, when we need that one person, that one person can sometimes be another student,
right,
but sometimes it mm-hmm. needs to be somebody else. And so
just anybody.
At one point, Tyler goes to the school guidance counselor, mm-hmm. and that is Mr. Porter. And Tyler's complaining about it, talking about how he was pantsed in the hallway. Right. And Mr. Porter had no idea what he was talking about. He's like, you know, you can't really. And let me say something we don't have that as a bullet point here, but let's point this out really quickly. Teachers, if you work in the schools, you have to keep up with the lingo, right?
In Mr. Porter's defense, he said, the school I came from, kids shot each other.
Right.
You know, I didn't heard of this stuff.
Right.
But he should.
Yeah. I mean, but if you're going to connect with the kids and you're going, you have to be out in the halls. You have to be engaging with them because he very nearly lost Tyler at that point.
Oh, I thought he did.
He started to. That was the beginning of it.
Oh, okay.
And then after that, you know, Tyler says something to the effect of, I don't know why, you know, mm-hmm. I'm the victim and I'm the one that gets called down to the office.
I think he's absolutely right.
And Mr. Porter says, I think that we need to sit down and think about what you might be doing to provoke it.
Right.
You know, what can you do to protect yourself? And Tyler, he blows his lid.
And the kids are right. There are these insidious things going on behind the scenes, and frequently parents and teachers are completely unaware of it.
Right.
Of who the predators are,
right,
and who are just victims.
Right.
And frequently the victim, there was a law passed in Florida a few years ago. You can't defend yourself. If
right.
you defend yourself, you're going to get into as much trouble
yeah.
as the perpetrator.
Yeah.
That's all wrong because it unleashes the perpetrators.
Yeah.
On the victims.
Because usually the perpetrators don't care about the consequences anyways.
No.
Yeah.
But you're not allowed to defend yourself.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember my son was, felt as though he was being bullied. This was, mm-hmm. you know, back when he was like maybe in sixth grade, felt yeah. he was being bullied. It was before he had his recent growth spurt.
Mm-hmm.
So he was about a foot shorter.
Yeah, he wouldn't get bullied now.
No.
he grew 8 inches
yeah.
in the last year.
But he, And so, you know, I had to talk to him about it. I said, right. you know, this is what I want you to do. This is how, I would encourage you to defend yourself.
Right.
And here's what's going to happen
next.
Knowing
what the risks are.
What's going to happen next is you will get suspended.
You will get suspended. Mm-hmm.
But here's how we'll handle that, and here's what
right.
we'll do.
Right.
But you're right. It releases the perpetrators.
It gives permission to the perpetrators.
Right.
Because
right.
the perpetrators don't care.
Right.
And now they have a license
right.
to go after their victims.
Right.
Right.
So I think that The big point here that we need to make from Mr. Porter when he says, you know, maybe we need to look at what you're doing. Mm-hmm. It's not that he's wrong. We do need to see what Tyler may be doing mm-hmm. to instigate or to draw some attention to some of that negative attention to himself.
Right.
That's probably not the time to mention it though.
No.
When
Tyler
you have
came
a
for
student,
another, why did Tyler come there?
Right.
And that's where Porter made his mistake, is that he wasn't dealing with what Tyler was bringing him.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So, you know, those of us who work with kids, we really have to be mindful
to
of that.
Right.
Right. Listen
right.
to what they're saying.
Right.
Tyler's there in distress.
Right.
Because people are pulling his pants down while he's walking down the hallway. People right. are calling him names. People are hurting him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you're wanting to focus on, well, what are you doing mm-hmm. to provoke that?
That's right. Classic case of blaming the victim.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we that's, you know, if you're working with kids, we have to get away from that. We have
right.
to stop doing that kind of
right.
stuff
mm-hmm.
because that's just not,
yeah,
that's
the adults,
not going to do what we're needing it to do.
Yeah. The adults should be protecting.
Right.
And that's their main goal. That's what the kids want.
Right.
The kids want to be protected by the adults from their victimizers.
Right. And so in response to that, you know, Tyler says, well, that's right. We should blame the full thing is something like, mm-hmm. yeah, that's right. We should blame the victim. We should be blaming the kids who make people want to kill themselves.
That's right. Right.
And Mr. Porter in his interesting wisdom mm-hmm. says, are you talking about Hannah Baker? He's like talking about everybody. and so,
well, but this is that another one of those times where the administration is very sensitive about Hannah Baker.
Right.
They have to stop talking because they have this lawsuit going.
Right, yeah.
And so that's another indication that we really can't deal with it because we have a lawsuit going.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Let's let
well,
all
we'll
these
get,
kids suffer.
We'll get to that in a minute, what the administration is doing
yeah,
and
God.
Or not doing. We'll get to that. That comes out really well in the next tape. But,
mm-hmm.
but you know, Tyler brings up the ultimate point, really,
right.
is, you know, we'll talk about blame in a few minutes too, because we wrote our article about that for this week.
Right.
It'll be in the ledger on Sunday. But, you know, why would we be blaming the victim?
Right.
Why, as you said, you know, when we make statements like, well, what are you doing to provoke it? We're saying, what are you doing to cause the other people to do that to you?
Right. And in most schools, if the victims do not have the feeling that the teachers and administrators are protecting them, you're going to lose these kids. They're going to protect themselves, and
Absolutely.
You're going to lose credibility.
Absolutely.
Because if you're so clueless that you don't realize who's mm-hmm. causing these, who the perpetrators are,
right,
and that you're not protecting us from them,
right,
then you've lost all credibility. You'll have no respect. The kids will not respect you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you have no hope then of helping them or of really getting to.
They're not going to come to see you.
A time when you're going to make a difference. Yeah.
Because they know you're clueless. You don't know what's really going on.
Right.
And so they're not going to come to you.
Exactly.
And so the police get to win again.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Now, the last main point, I think, from this tape, I mean, there were lots of other things, but this tape overall, again, you could see that emotional buildup.
Yeah.
It was really priming us for the next episode.
Right.
But we talked maybe the first episode or two about the way that we really should have a focus on, or the way that the producers should have focused on signs of suicide risk, mm-hmm. signs of depression, things like that. Here in this episode, I think that they did a wonderful job of depicting one of the big ones.
That's right. Absolutely.
When Clay's dad said, did you take a shower? And
right.
he goes, yeah. And he goes, did you take a shower? And he goes, I might not have. And then, and Clay kind of goes into that thing where he says, you know, I was thinking about the whole shower thing and getting in there and,
right.
and take washing and taking a shower was too much
for him to do.
It's not that he didn't care.
Right.
It's that taking a shower was too much for him.
Too much, right.
And that is a really, again, it's a great example of what we see sometimes in kids that are really depressed.
This is one of the signs.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You stop taking care of yourself.
That hygiene starts falling off mm-hmm. and you're not showering, you're not worrying about how you look or how others
right.
perceive you. It's really concerning when you have a student who has typically been one to
right.
take care of themselves,
and he always was. He was always squeaky clean, mm-hmm. you know, his hair, and all of a sudden he stops.
Right,
that's the kind of sudden change in behavior
right.
that we ask parents to watch out for.
Now,
you seen a sudden change in behavior?
Right. Now, what was wonderful about his parents, as compared right. to some of the other parents that we see in this program, is that his parents noticed.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They said something.
Yeah.
They didn't say, go get in the shower, I'm going to hose you off.
Right.
But mm-hmm. they said,
it's
I can tell
time.
Across the table mm-hmm. that you haven't showered.
And the fact that his dad was close enough to him.
Right.
That he could.
Yeah. I mean, they were sitting at a table together.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there are those connections mm-hmm. that they have that some of the other parent-child dyads and triads don't have.
So,
mm-hmm. So yeah, it's really, really important there.
Right.
So it's just a great example of that. But also, you know, when we think about the symptoms of depression, a few of the symptoms relate to energy levels.
Right.
And so when you are depressed, you sometimes don't have adequate energy to do some of the things that you need to do. So
mm-hmm.
sometimes you don't have the energy to take a shower,
right.
to take care of your hygiene. Sometimes you don't have the energy to eat or to, you know, prepare something, a meal for yourself or for somebody else.
Right.
And so when that's the case, you know, that's, again, a good sign that we may be talking about depression.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
So low energy, I think, is another good sign.
Yeah. That fatigue, low energy,
mm-hmm.
all that kind of good stuff. So, so with that, I think we're going to shift to, tape three, mm-hmm. side B. Now, there's a lot in this slot. This one.
Mm-hmm.
And so the focus of this tape was Marcus. Now, Marcus, there was in one of the previous episodes, I can't remember if it was side A of this tape or side B, but Marcus makes a comment at one point about I'm on track to be valedictorian.
Right.
And Courtney says, that's right, Marcus. We need to be worried about you graduating as valedictorian. And again, it's just that great example of values. Mm-hmm. To Marcus, these other people were less important than him being valedictorian. Mm-hmm. That was his focus. That's what he wanted, was to be valedictorian.
Right.
And it came out in a lot of his behaviors.
Comes out later, right?
Yeah. But this episode opens with the fight. Alex and I think the guy, they only said the other guy's name once or a couple times. I think it was Montgomery. Montgomery was his name. I think I wrote it down. But it's Montgomery. And they get into that fight because Montgomery's driving with Justin in the car and almost hits him. And Alex is like, hey, you know, we're both walking here. And Alex confronts him, tells him to get out of the Jeep, and then they fight. Mm-hmm. And Alex certainly gets the worst of it.
Yep.
But what this really shows us is Alex is losing it. And right. We see, again, thinking about what depression looks like, what suicide risk looks like, we are seeing his deterioration throughout these episodes.
We saw Clay's earlier.
Right.
He stops taking care of himself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now we see Alex unraveling in a different way.
Right.
And again, what I like about this series is that whether the characters are believable or not,
right,
when teenagers start to struggle,
mm-hmm.
this is how they struggle.
Right.
Some will stop taking a shower. Some will become explosive.
Right.
Some will become hyper-reactive to circumstances.
Right.
And that's what we're beginning to see now.
Right.
As they struggle with something that they really can't manage they don't have the skills to manage.
Right.
They begin to compensate in different ways.
Right.
Right.
Maladaptively.
Maladaptive adjustments because they don't know how to deal with what's confronting them.
Right. And remember, there's another scene in this episode
mm-hmm.
where Alex and Justin and I can't remember who else is in the car. They pick up Clay.
Oh, those other two boys.
And they take him for a ride.
The other boy.
And Alex is driving and he turns the lights off and he's driving really fast and he starts scaring everybody. And Alex mm-hmm. is, you know, he's focused. He's, zoned out
mm-hmm.
driving to the end. And of course he gets pulled over by a cop, but it's his dad. And so it's like, again, a cry, if we want to call it a cry for help. This kid is saying, I mean, in distress.
Here he is driving 90 miles an hour in a 45-mile zone with three other kids in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And all his father can say is,
Make sure
you're home for dinner. He didn't think beyond that.
Right.
What would cause? Now, everybody knows that there's all these issues going on.
Right.
You know, or the parents. Everybody should be aware that all these issues are going on. And that's all they're going to be home for dinner.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And before that, you know, just kind of another indication of how out of sync his dad is with everything that's going on. Alex comes home after that big fight. I mean, his face is just beat mm-hmm. down. And he shows up home and dad's talking to him like,
well, he's cleaning a gun.
Yeah, he's cleaning his gun. And he's saying, well, you know, I know we don't always see eye to eye. But, you know, you stood up for yourself. And so I'm proud of you, son. And it's like,
didn't ask any questions.
No.
And Alex just, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Never got a chance to say anything.
Yeah.
And then just gets up and walks away.
And you so get the feeling, and I would love to hear from anybody who's listening to this. I get the feeling that Alex's dad could say anything. Mm-hmm. And as long as Alex said, yes, sir,
be okay.
Everything would be fine.
That's what it looked
like. It wouldn't matter what else was going on. It wouldn't matter what Alex really did. As long as he said, yes, sir, and he was polite and respectful in that way, then it wouldn't matter. I'd love to hear what people thought about that. Because you mentioned the yes, sir, yes, ma'am stuff in a previous podcast. I don't remember if it was in the series or not. But he... you know, I grew up in the South, and so it was always yes, sir, yes, ma'am. And as I've grown up, you can see where if you pay attention to it, you can see where people mm-hmm. abuse it and right. use it to manipulate and things like that.
Control.
And so mm-hmm. so I did not carry on that.
Your kids don't say yes.
I don't require them to. Right. If they choose to, then I'm happy
Your
with
son
that.
Does.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah. So I think they do that more from modeling mm-hmm. because I'm right. still stuck with it. Right. But yeah, so, but you can see it when I watch this and I hear him say, yes, sir. Mm-hmm. So, unemotionally.
Mechanically.
Yeah. It's just a, that's yes, sir.
The requisite response.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. it's
yeah,
it's,
but he doesn't give him a chance to talk.
Yeah,
the kids have no voice here.
None.
And you see it in family after family after family. The kids have no voice.
Yeah, yeah, none at all. Right. They have no opportunity to say anything to anybody, and even to the people that they're supposed to be able to talk to, like Mr. Porter.
The people at school.
They're still not able to talk to anybody.
You know, he didn't ask Tyler anything.
Yeah. So, so after that, you know, the fight occurred, and then Mr. Porter, and I'm not sure who Mr. Porter is talking to. It's a woman.
She must be an assistant principal.
Yeah, I'm thinking so, like a dean or something.
Right.
And they mm-hmm. are talking, and she says, wait a minute, where did it happen? And Mr. Porter tells him where it happens. Now, Mr. Porter, of course, is the person that broke up the fight.
Right.
And he tells her where it happened, and she says, oh, that wasn't on school property. That was in the middle of the street.
Right.
There's nothing we can do about it. We can't police the streets.
Right.
And
it's not our problem.
It's not our problem. Because, of course, they're worried about the lawsuit that's going on and all that kind of stuff. And Mr. Porter says, what do you mean? These kids need consequences and boundaries. And again, I couldn't help but think, what? Consequences and boundaries.
There were times when I have been told mm-hmm. that we can't do anything about these kids smoking marijuana or drinking because this wasn't a school-sponsored trip.
Right.
It was a school event.
Right.
But there's some school-sponsored phrase.
There's a line there somewhere.
And the parents were saying, wait a minute, these girls were smoking marijuana and drinking, and mm-hmm. they were at a school function. Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't a school-sponsored event, so we can't do anything about it.
Yeah. That's interesting.
That has happened.
Yeah.
In my kid's school.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked about this many times, and you and I sit around, and I know this will sound very exciting to people who are listening and watching this, but we sit around, we talk about this stuff all the time mm-hmm. because it really is frustrating. The fact that we see these troublesome behaviors.
Right.
And our first reaction as adults is to say, well, we need consequences and boundaries.
That's right.
We need new ways to punish these kids because clearly the old ways aren't working anymore. Mm-hmm. And I fail to understand why that's our first go-to. I don't understand. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I don't understand why we punish and punish and punish and punish and say, you know what? I've punished him like 15 times and he just keeps doing it.
Well, and
why is it so hard to see? Well, maybe we should do something different.
And the other thing you see here is in these tapes, mm-hmm. in this episode, you see these kids unraveling.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have anybody to talk to. And what's the solution? Boundaries and consequences.
Boundaries.
If we just had better punishments.
Yeah.
If we set up clearer boundaries, you know, that would change everything. No.
No.
It's not going to change anything.
That's
Tyler's still going to get bullied. He's still going to have his pants pulled down. Kids are still going to throw each other under the bus.
Yeah.
The alpha males are going to be able to be bullies.
Yeah.
Because they're allowed to.
Right.
Okay. So no, we don't need. Somebody said one time, it was I think James Garbarino. We had lunch with him in Savannah, and they were putting metal detectors in schools. And in one of the books he wrote, if the cause of school shootings is the absence of metal detectors, then that would be a good solution.
Right.
But that's not what's causing, that's not what's causing the problem.
Yeah. And now that's the guy who, of course, has written about violence and aggression. And so he knows.
Right. He knows.
But so we really have to step back and think about what is our purpose?
What are our kids struggling with? What are they dealing with?
So if our purpose is to help our kids, is to help them develop, is to help educate them, if that's our purpose, then we need to figure out how to accomplish that goal.
That's right.
Not how to make kids conform to a way that it will allow them to learn the way that we are stuck in teaching them.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yep. It does to me. But again, moving away from that punishment mentality, you know, if we just have strict enough boundaries, if we have enough parental controls, if we control the circumstances, everything will be fine. Mm-hmm. No, everything won't be fine.
Yeah.
They're going to do it within those boundaries. They're going to have the same problems with narrower boundaries and smaller boundaries.
Yeah.
They're still going to be bullying and hurting each other.
Right. Yeah. So we have to find a better way to teach and to educate and to help them develop. Noreen did join us.
Thank you, Noreen.
And she wrote that they used to have a line in the road where the school property ended.
Did they really?
So that on the other side they could smoke and nobody would get in trouble because the school couldn't do anything about it. That's fantastic.
We don't care that they're smoking. They just can't smoke on this side of the yellow line.
Don't cross this line. But if
you want to beat somebody up, you have to do it on that side of the line.
Right.
Then it's not our business. Then it's not our concern.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if it's on a Saturday,
it's not a school sponsored event.
No.
So yeah, the system is messed up like that. And you know what that gets us back to? Not to bring this up because I know that you love this topic. It always brings me back to code of conduct. So I knew that would make you take
a
deep breath.
Let that one spin around on the floor for a minute.
But that's what it is. It's the code of conduct. Right. The code of conduct tells us, you know, the size of the square that we have to fit in. And if anything is outside of that,
then it gets punished.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. You know,
mindlessly.
Right.
And don't get, I don't
oh, answer. I've got some new examples since the last time we talked about it.
Okay. All right. Next.
You want to move
on? No, I was getting off on that and I'll never stop. I got to have a drink of water.
So now, what Mr. Porter and this dean woman decide is that they are going to send Alex and Montgomery to the peer counseling. I can't remember the name of it.
They have some peer court or
hearing. Yeah, like a teen court type of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And what is...
Peer mediation.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Something like that. And Clay happens to sit on that.
He's on that because it's the honors.
Yeah,
this was the honors group. These were high achieving students who sat on this honor court.
And of course, I wrote so many things down and I didn't write the name of that court. But so they're going back and forth about, well, it was Clay. It was Alex's fault. No, it was Montgomery's fault. It was this fault, that fault. And Clay just sort of sitting there zoned out says, maybe it's all y'all's fault.
Right. Right.
And I thought that this is where we could talk about casting blame because, man, that's what we want to do all the time.
Right.
We want to find out, our goal is to figure out who was the guilty.
They set up this thing, all these people got together, and the goal was to figure out who was guilty.
Right.
Now, we have all these issues swirling around in this school, but now we're going to stop everything and figure out who's guilty.
Right. We're not going to take into account that Alex, who is a relatively small, passive appearing guy, picks a fight with a big jock in the middle of the street, in front of everybody, in front of the jock's friends, picks a fight with him. Why it happens doesn't matter.
Right.
You know what? We are with code of conduct. Doesn't matter why. All that matters is that it happened, and so this is the consequence.
That's right. No, Nobody wants to know why it happened. What are the circumstances that led to this? Why is Alex? Why does Alex suddenly have this such a short fuse?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Not to mention, Alex is saying, "It's my fault. Mm-hmm. I did it. Right. I started the fight."
Right.
But no.
Nobody hears that.
The court ends with their decision being that Montgomery gets suspended. Nothing happens to Alex.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And of course, the reason that happens is because the court is made up of a lot of people who are on the tapes.
Right. That's right.
And so they're protecting Alex because Alex also is on the tape. He was tape three.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that it's a very interesting thing that's happening because it's, a sort of a subtle thing that hopefully you caught. Hopefully you saw that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Clay and Courtney and
Marcus.
And I can't remember the other guy's name that he's on it as well. He's like, I think he's the next tape. They're all in the court and they're all making the decision and figuring out, okay, well, we need to make sure that we don't punish Alex because Alex is on the tape also. And who knows what he'll say?
Right.
Who knows what he will tell what happened. So it's troublesome that, again, while all of this is happening, Mr. Porter standing there monitoring, and all he can say is, "Hey guys, watch your language."
That's right.
They throw out the F-bomb or whatever,
yeah.
And Mr. Porter just says, "Hey guys, watch your language."
Watch your language. That's what they're concerned about.
And
it's hard to dislike Mr. Porter. You know,
right.
He's a likable enough guy.
He's gentle.
He's so damn clueless.
Yeah, he just doesn't.
But he's not clueless. There are clueless administrators.
Right.
And I think what they're trying to portray here is not that there's anything wrong with Porter. It's that there are clueless administrators. And that's
right.
I keep going back to that this is an accurate representation of too many school administrators who are clueless.
Right. Yeah. I think that if we want to call her clueless, the first guidance counselor.
Yeah, yes.
She was naive. This
likeable.
Is...
likeable.
Right.
Pleasant.
Yeah.
But clueless.
But just a little bit hippie, a little bit rock and roll. But
yeah.
But Mr. Porter you know that he has the right intentions.
He does.
You know that he wants
the right
to
intentions.
Help these kids. He seems to be very interested.
Mm-hmm.
And what we'll see in a future episode is he's very distressed about this.
Mm-hmm.
But he just says the wrong thing.
It is a very good depiction of the vast chasm that exists between school administrators and school students.
Right.
The life, the culture and life of the students is so vastly different from that of the administration.
Right.
You know, they're just
they
live in two completely different worlds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's not a rainbow bridge to connect them.
No, there's no bridge.
Nothing.
No.
And so it's just
crowd
misunderstanding
control.
After misunderstanding after misunderstanding.
Right.
And you know, you can see the administration try. Again,
they
you can see
try.
Mr. Porter try.
It's not, it's not their, the intentions do the right thing.
Yeah, so.
But when, so the, when that chasm exists.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it exists. All right, so. So we need to the moral of that is we need to stop worrying about whose fault it is. We kind of got off on a tangent there.
We did.
Yeah, but that's okay. We need to stop worrying about whose fault it is.
Right.
Because spending all that time, we kind of got started with it.
Mm-hmm.
Spending all that time figuring out whose fault it is takes away the time we need to solve the problem that's there to begin with.
That's right. And we mentioned that in the column.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that we do the search for the guilty.
Right.
The first step. We also have to search for the guilty. What it does is it takes time from problem solving. You know, while you're out spending time, here's this, and I think it's a good depiction. Here are these honor students, and everybody's trying to decide whose fault this fight is. In the meantime, Rome is burning. You know,
right.
these kids are really dealing with another very important issue. but everybody's missing that because we have to spend time figuring out who's guilty.
Right.
Who's the guilty party in this fight?
Right. You know,
but the city's burning down in the background.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's confusing and, right. and frustrating and everything. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah. Now the next point here, and I hate it that it sounds like we're having a little bit of audio issues while we're getting some messages that we're getting. So hopefully it'll clear up. I don't know what, if anything, I can do to fix that. So hopefully it'll clear up as we're going. Sorry about that. But so later on, you know, Clay goes home and Clay's distressed.
Yeah.
Clay is in his room and his mom comes in and is talking to him because she's the attorney that is now was hired by the school
to further complicate things.
Right, right.
She's been hired to defend the school.
Right.
And she's defending them against Hannah's parents.
Right. And Clay even says, "Wait, you're going against the Bakers?"
Right.
And he because he takes it so personally.
Right.
You know, that's just an indication of that. And so they have this really emotional interaction and mom asks him, you know, honey, are you being bullied?
Right.
And Clay, of course, he hasn't heard his tape yet.
Right.
He says, what if I'm the bully, mom?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And she says, well, you can't be, you know, you can't be the bully. And he doesn't understand, but she's saying you can't be the bully because I know you and I know that you can't be the bully. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's two pieces to this one. The first piece to this one is that, you know, what constitutes bullying mm-hmm. is somewhat fluid.
Right.
What I find to be bullying... If people heard the way that we talk with each other and joke with each other sometime, mm-hmm. some people might think that Richard really bullies me a lot and vice versa, maybe a little bit.
To borrow a phrase, OMG.
But if people heard that, you know, some of the things that we can say to each other is fine because we've known each other for so long and everything. But there are things that I can say to you that I could never say to some other people I know mm-hmm. because it would come across as in the very least insensitive
right.
At its worst, maybe bullying, but, mm-hmm. but of course that's not necessarily the intent
right.
Or certainly not the intent. So bullying is somewhat of a subjective personal mm-hmm. thing that has a different definition for each person. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one piece.
That's one piece. Right.
The other piece, and again, not to overemphasize Clay's parents, but Clay's parents are in tune with him.
Of all the parents in this, mm-hmm. they are the most in tune,
right,
with their son,
right.
Mm-hmm. They're the closest. They have the closest relationship. They're the most aware of his ups and downs,
right.
Of the changes in his emotions,
they're paying attention,
right.
They're mm-hmm. engaged.
Changes in physical appearance. They notice all those things, and they notice them quickly.
Right. And so while we're at a point in the series where Clay still isn't sure right. where he comes in on these tapes, mm-hmm. he may think that he falls in just like these other people, and we wouldn't have any reason to believe otherwise.
Right. Right. And at this point, he doesn't.
Right.
Right.
And so, you know, he's thinking, well, if all of these other people are doing these things,
right.
I must have done something like that too.
Right.
And so
right.
he says, what if I'm the bully? Mm-hmm. And his mom knows that that's not him.
It's not him.
That right. that he could not be that type mm-hmm. of person.
But so she knows there's bullies because she's been hired as yes, the attorney.
Exactly.
So she knows.
Yeah.
Right.
And so even though we don't, if you haven't watched the whole series yet, you don't know what's to come.
Right.
She's previewing it. Mm-hmm. She can see it. She knows.
Right.
And it's the connection that the parents have with the kids. They're not up in his business.
Right.
All the time. Mm-hmm. They're not smothering him. They're not helicoptering him. They're not, you know, controlling him and containing him. You know, he rides his bike all over town.
Yeah, he's comes and
doing
goes.
All these things that he wants to do, mm-hmm. but they know him. Mm-hmm. They did all of their work. And we talked about this, in the podcast that, just recently that will air tomorrow. But
That's right.
You know, if you're, it's confusing. If you're listening to this as a podcast,
it's confusing to me.
This was from the 19th. That developmental parenting that we right. have to change over time. His parents already did their job.
That's right.
They had that connection. They had that relationship mm-hmm. with him from early on. And now that he's right. a teenager, they're pulling away a little bit.
That's right. They're allowing him to have a little space mm-hmm. To maneuver on his own.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
We call that detachment.
Detachment parenting. But that's the developmental mm-hmm. pattern that we have to follow as parents. Right. We can't be the same parent to a 17-year-old that we are to a 2-year-old.
Right.
We just can't do that.
Right.
So, and I think that his parents did a great job of demonstrating
they
that.
They are.
Now, a little bit later, or just after the bully, what if I'm the bully mom statement, there's another interaction between Clay and his mom. And she says, I can't help you if you don't talk to me. And Clay says, you can't help anyways, mom. Mm-hmm. Now this, I think of it, it that almost will break your heart when you hear that, because you hear the mom trying. She's trying to engage. She's trying to say, let me help you. I can't help you if you don't tell me. And this is something we'll come back to it later. So we'll kind of put a feather in it, because this is echoed in episode 13 by Mr. Mm-hmm. Porter, because when Hannah goes to Mr. Porter, he says, I can't do anything if you don't tell me.
Right.
And, but the way that he responds to it, and because of the nature of their relationship, it goes very differently.
Right.
So if we take this in two parts, so she says, you know, I can't help you if you don't talk to me. What his mom's doing is his mom is being available. Mm-hmm. His mom is saying, look, I'm here.
Right.
If you need to talk, when mm-hmm. you want to talk, when right. you can talk, come mm-hmm. to me and we will talk about it.
Right.
I will help with whatever I can.
Right.
And that's going to be different when we get to the last bullet on this slide. But for right now, we're seeing, again, a good example of a parent engaging the child. Not forcing him.
Right.
She's not saying, come sit at the table and we're going to figure this out.
We're going to have this out.
Right.
We're going to have this discussion.
Right. Mm. We're not starting the penalty phase.
Right. That's right.
You know, right. We're saying, I'm here. If you need to talk about it, right. I'm available. I won't take the case. I want to help. Mm-hmm. I want to do these.
You're
things.
My first priority.
Exactly.
If I have to get off this case, I will. You're my first priority.
That's the other
That's
part.
That's what kids need to hear.
Right?
Right.
I mean, how many parents do that?
Right.
How many parents say, I will stop all of this.
I will stop.
If that's what's going to help you.
That's right. Everything else will come to my work, my whatever else I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Everything else, you are the most important thing in my life.
Right, right. It is, and I think that, I think Clay hears that. I think that Clay knows that.
He knows that.
And I think that that's why, even though he's deteriorating, even though he's struggling and he's depressed and all that kind of stuff, his end of this at the series, his status at the end of the series is very different than everybody else's.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because he knows he that knows. His parents are there right. and supportive for him. Mm-hmm. So now... The second part, I don't need to go to the slide. The second part is, you couldn't help anyways, mom. Mm-hmm. As he's closing the door in front of her.
That was it.
That was intense. I want to know how many parents would let that happen. You have to let that happen.
You think about that as that door was closed. You knew he was going to close.
Yeah, yeah.
So you knew that was coming. But the fact that it closed so slowly gave mm-hmm. you time to think about it, both from his perspective, what he needed to accomplish, mm-hmm. and from the parent's perspective.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking, I know exactly why Alex is doing that.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, boy, Clay, as a parent, could you stand there and allow that door to be closed?
Yeah.
Whoa. And I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
It would be very difficult.
I don't know. But again, they're setting these parents seem to be in tune with this kid and know what he needs at each moment.
Because what would have happened if she would have held the door open?
Stuck her foot in the door or, you know,
he would have gotten
pushed back on it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it would not have gone well.
This is my house. You can't just close the door on me.
That's right.
That's rude. That, you know, you,
I will say when this conversation's over.
Right. I will decide when the conversation ends.
Oh, I've heard that a few times.
No, that was a powerful scene.
Yeah.
And when, because it closed slowly, I was struck when I watched this one, because you can think about it from both perspectives, you know.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think, he's right. What is mom going to do?
She can't solve the problem that they're all struggling with, is what he's saying there.
Yeah.
Not that you're incompetent.
Right.
The problem we're having, mom, you can't even begin to get close
You can't solve this problem.
I couldn't even begin to explain it to you.
It would be too much.
Right.
And so, and again, it's just a beautiful scene that she allows the door to close.
Right.
And allows, and you know how she felt.
Right.
I'm sure that she went and had to talk to her husband. They had to figure something out there.
That would have been very difficult to process.
Yeah.
And it would have taken time to get over it. And that may have been a sleepless night.
Yes.
For her.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised, thinking about these parents, if she even sat outside the door just to listen and just to hear to make sure that he was okay.
Make sure he's still breathing.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Mm. Because it's that kind. But again, as hard as it is, it really is sometimes what we have to do. We have to let the door close.
And parents have to remember that you don't have to fight every fight.
Right.
Parenting is a marathon. It happens over years, and you have to you can't worry about winning every fight.
Yeah.
And it's not always about disrespect and disobedience.
Yeah.
There are other issues in our children's lives.
Yeah. Noreen said that it seems like Clay's mom is growing as a parent.
She is.
And she certainly is.
How she was earlier.
Yeah. Hmm? With the penalty phase.
Penalty phase. Before we get to the penalty phase.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, she wanted to go. She went right after it in the early scenes. Now she's becoming. Although she has an insight that the other parents don't possess.
Right. But, you know, in with this, and maybe, you know, I'm just kind of starting to think about this. Perhaps, you know, it may be that substance abuse is a key issue for her. And so when he came home drunk and he was acting like that, that was just something that triggered her.
Just worried about.
You know, and because we all have those.
Right.
But generally speaking, you know, she's been pretty level.
She's good.
Well, she did do the medication.
Thing, I like the parent she's becoming.
Yeah, I do too. So so in contrast. Okay. Let's speak for just a moment about the fact how this episode sort of ends. And that's with Jessica sitting in her bed, drinking heavily from a flask, a deep drink from a flask, as there's a knock on her door.
It's not the first time she's had a drink.
Right.
Obviously. Right.
There's a knock at the door. It's her dad. He peeks in as she hides the flask, and they talk for a moment, and he's like, "It's not that Justin guy, is it?" Because and then she says, "No, Dad," and kind of giggles at him a little bit. And he closes the door, and she gets the flask back out and drinks some more.
Picks it up and drinks again.
One of the things that we talk about in our parenting book is attention.
Right.
And the attention section of our book is all about the relationship. Not the relationship per se. It's the interactions between the parent and the child.
Right.
And so, what we have is we have two very opposing examples of parents. One parent that peeks in the door, talks to him, listens to him, asks the important questions, and offers help and support and emotion and and everything. The other is one that peeks in, sort of stays very generic, never even comes in the room.
No, he right.
And is focused on, you know what, it's time for lights out.
Yep. Setting boundaries.
Uh-huh.
Okay, there we go, back to boundaries.
Right.
And the assumption that he knows what's going on.
Right. Right.
And that he'll protect her.
Right.
Because he knows.
Is it that Justin?
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I'll do 1, 2.
Right.
And she giggles and there's no way that you can see that girl sitting on the bed the way that she was sitting on the bed and not think.
Not know.
Man, she's struggling.
And again, you have these kids dealing with this enormous issue and all their guilt and all their fear. And it goes, once again, it goes on. He has no clue.
Yeah.
No clue. The only parent who has a clue that something is brewing are Clay's parents.
Yeah.
Clay's mother. We don't know about his dad yet. Yeah. His dad does a good job with him. Yeah. But Clay's mother is the only one who has a clue that something is brewing. The other parents are clueless. The other thing that struck me as I watched her drink was these each of these kids is beginning to cope
very
in his or her own way.
Yeah.
And much of it is maladaptive coping, you know, and which is what teenagers do.
Yeah.
So the other thing that we need to think about is, you know, Clay copes by falling apart. Alex copes by.
But one of the things Clay says, and I wrote this down, but I didn't put it on the thing. Mm-hmm. Clay says, I don't want to help. I want to hurt.
Right.
And so, and you know, he's
he doesn't want to hurt others.
Right.
He just has to.
He wants to feel it.
Wants to feel this pain.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Because so, even his friend asked, well, who do you want to hurt? And Clay didn't really answer that.
He didn't answer.
It wasn't that he wants to hurt anybody else.
Right.
I mean, to some extent he does, because he was really angry with Tyler. And this was right around the time that he sent out that picture of Tyler from his room. But he wants to feel it. And you can see that's why he's going through the tape so slowly.
He turns inward. He turns it on himself.
Right.
Clay is the one character who clearly is turning all this anguish onto himself.
He's taking responsibility.
Right.
He's the only one
that's assuming, really taking. That's right. He's taking ownership of whatever. I don't know what I did, but whatever it is, I'm willing to assume responsibility. Others are. Jessica is drinking.
Justin is drinking. Jessica's drinking.
Right.
Alex is
decompensating, and he's got this hyper reactivity, short fuse. He's externalizing his anger. Clay is internalizing his. So, but again, this is what teenagers do. Different kids are going to react differently, and you have to be tuned into your child and how your child is likely to react. If they turn on themselves, they're more likely to go in a direction we don't want to go. If they turn on others, they're going to get into other kinds of trouble.
Absolutely.
So you have to know your child and how your child is going to respond and cope with a crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think that we're going to wrap up there. We're almost at our hour. We usually go right about an hour. So this is just a reminder of our schedule here. Slide through these slides real quick. Hey, there's our contact information.
Stay in touch.
So you can stay in touch with us. But next week, Noreen, this is for you, Noreen. Next Wednesday, May 24th.
Oh, that's right.
At 6:30, we will be doing take 4. So that's going to be episodes 7 and 8. That was right. You got that. Episodes 7 and 8 will be next week. We're entitling that one "Saying and Doing the Wrong Thing." Mm-hmm. We get a little bit from some new characters next time, so it's going to be really interesting. So that's going to be next Wednesday. It's a little bit of a shift from our typical schedule, but we're going to be Wednesday next week and Wednesday the week after that. So we'll give you the reminders for that.
Right.
So as you see here, we have Wednesday the 24th. And then Wednesday, the 31st, are going to be our next two podcasts.
Right.
So we will be here talking about those episodes. I'm excited about it. I really enjoy these conversations, and I do. Mm-hmm. I do.
It's been an interesting project, watching these, rewatching them, thinking about the parents, thinking about the kids, thinking about school administrators. It's been a very useful project.
Yeah, I think that it makes me think of the interview we did with the I can't remember her name, that does Psychology of Superheroes.
Yes.
And how she breaks them down. We could do that.
No. Superheroes?
or TV shows or different things. I hear some other people do it. There's a couple of other podcasts where they do it. They do an okay job.
We might.
But,
we might.
You know, we could do Maltese Falcon. So that we can...
So then even I would know about
that's
it.
That's right. Okay. Charlie Chaplin. That was from the other day. All right. So that's it for today. I hope that you guys join us next week. I'll be posting out the reminders and everything just as usual. If you follow us on YouTube, you will get all the reminders. Everything's there. Same thing on Twitter and Facebook and all that jazz. So, all right. So that is it. And, thank you, Noreen. Noreen likes my shirt. What do you call my shirt?
Schizoaffective shirt. It's a schizophrenic shirt. It doesn't know what it wants to be.
But and then I got my my tie that goes with it. That's like four different colors, so I can pick a different color for it and everything. So no worries, it's all good. Thank you, Noreen. I like this shirt too. So all right, that's it. All right. So until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.